Thanks, Vibhakshini. 5 minutes past eight. This is AM Live and it's time for us to talk. Well, there's been much talk about crime, its causes, its consequences, and most important, what needs to be done about it. That was certainly in focus last week during the build-up to the President's State of the Nation address, and indeed in the days that followed. Many approving remarks made about the extent to which the President had made this a priority, and lots of people saying that we need to have a much tougher approach to crime. One different view, though, is that the big stick won't solve crime. That's the headline that appeared in a story in the Sunday Independent on Sunday. The knee-jerk reaction to violent crimes is to lock up offenders and throw away the key, wrote the criminologist Don Pinnock. He argues that doing this is precisely what's causing the problem. And the focus that we're going to put on crime today is on younger offenders. What sort of legacy does a tougher approach leave? Could getting tougher on crime backfire with the next generation? Welcome to the After Eight debate. Now, just to tell you, because we're in Cape Town, different numbers for you to call in if you want to join in, not the old 0891 number. Of course, that reverts when Xolani Gwala comes on for morning talk. But just for the After Eight debate, take down these numbers if you've got a view on the subject or some questions. Hopefully, you'll join us on 021-461-3079. 021-461-3079. You can also get us on 021-461-3075. Those two Cape Town numbers, 461-3079 and 461-3075. SMS line doesn't change, 34701 if you'd like to get in touch with us via SMS. Let's meet our guests. First of all, we say good morning to Dr. Don Pinnock. He's a criminologist and a journalist. He's written a number of books about gangs down in the Western Cape. Dr. Pinnock, welcome. Nice to have you with us.
Morning, John.
Another doctor in the house, Dr. Anne Skelton, coordinates the Child Litigation Project. It's part of the Centre for Child Law at the University of Pretoria. Dr. Skelton, welcome to you.
Good morning.
Joining us on the line from our Pretoria studio. Dr. Pinnock, let's just recap for people who may not have read your story. You're focusing very particularly on the consequences of a get-tough approach on young offenders. Why your concerns about this?
Well, I have three problems with the way in which the I think the country is going, really. One is prisons, and they are a problem because young men, usually poor, very often with very difficult father relationships, are being put into prison and they're having nothing to do but sit there and, mm-hmm. and you know, idle hands brew trouble. And what we've got is huge prison gangs that control the prisons. They're crime cookers, and that's where a lot of the problem of crime in the streets is coming. The second one, I think, is a failure to trust communities. We have, and we can discuss it later, the problem of the Child Justice Bill that got sort of obliterated, really, in the process, mm-hmm. Which Anne Skelton was very central to creating. And I think the problem there is that we have black-tie lawyers who run these committees. They don't trust legal solutions outside their narrow domain. And we have also people in government with, many of them, with no experience of communities, no trust of community action. And so that kind of legislation doesn't hang well with them. And then, you know, the real problem also is a failure of vision. If you put large numbers of poor young people in prison, and then you have as your solution to the problem, which the government is talking about now, more police, more courts, more throughput, all you're doing is putting more young people in prison. And that's going to be a disaster up ahead.
One quote stands out in your piece, which is indeed highlighted in the layout. Nobody learns to be a better citizen in jail. We're cycling people through crime cookers. Now, the Child Justice Bill referred to there by Dr. Pinnock. Dr. Skelton, some thoughts on that. First of all, for people who don't know what its original intentions were, perhaps you could set that out.
Yes, the Child Justice Bill starts from the premise that where possible, it's better to divert young people away from the criminal justice system, still to hold them accountable, but to do that by making them understand the impact of their behavior, the consequences of their behavior, and so on, through programs based in the community. The bill, though, is very balanced and does acknowledge that sometimes serious violent crimes are committed by young people, and that obviously then, in some instances, it will be necessary to detain them, but then it does go into how to limit that to the very few cases where it's necessary.
Isn't one of the problems, though, that these solutions where you offer young offenders different programs, different role models and opportunity to perhaps engage with their victims and try and engage in, embark on some sort of restorative justice course, all that takes a huge amount of resources.
No, I don't think it does. And in fact, the Child Justice Bill was one of the first bills, or the first bill, to be properly costed. So we actually looked at that, because engaging with people from the communities is much cheaper than institutionalizing someone. Obviously, when you institutionalize someone, you've got to have teams of staff round the clock looking after them and so on. And of course, as Dr. Pinnock has said, you will be doing some harm in the long run as well. So using community resources, and we have the tremendous advantage in South Africa that we've got a very strong NGO and CBO community. And the Department of Social Development already engages with such structures to offer their diversion programs. In fact, we are diverting about 18,000 young people a year at the moment, despite the fact that we don't have a legal framework to do so.
And those diversions are into what kind of programs? I mean, is there any monitoring of the effectiveness of that diversion?
Well, they're into programs, as you've described, like restorative justice programs and so on. Government is in the process of setting up standards. They've just recently established their minimum standards for diversion, and the idea would have been that when the Child Justice Bill was passed, these would be part of the regulatory framework underpinning that act, and that may still happen if and when government decides to take the Child Justice Bill back to Parliament.
Let's take some calls. Hannah is calling us from Sea Point down in Cape Town. Morning, Hannah.
Good morning. What I hear, of course, is that you have to deal with a situation right now. But what is being done about dealing with the cause of what perpetrators are motivated to do what they're doing, and to change the direction, to learn, to get them to learn what didn't work for them, and perhaps pass that on to others who are in danger of perpetuating it? We must absolutely start at the beginning of self-esteem in education and in growing up. And there seems to be no program in dealing with the cause. It's only dealing with the effect. And that's very expensive, and it doesn't work.
Hannah, thanks. Calling from Sea Point, from Mayfair. Faisal, morning.
Hi, good morning, John. John, I'd like to agree with the previous caller and with Dawn as well. I think the common background among the youth that's committing these violent crimes is poverty and lack of education. I don't have a particular solution for that. I think the government is going to solve that. But my practical solution would be to have state-sponsored kindergarten schools in the squatter areas, actually.
Okay, well, that would be a start. It would also be something that would take time to build up. Faisal, thanks. Calling us from Mayfair, let me remind you of those numbers. 021-461-3079. 021-461-3075. So you've got a choice. You can give us a call on SAFM, South Africa's news and information leader. This is the After Eight debate. Dr. Pinnock, do you think this Child Justice Bill is doomed in this particular climate now? Because there's such a clamour around crime. Is there going to be any opportunity to be more reflective in the way that you suggest? Or do you fear that the demand for the get tough solution is becoming an overwhelming one?
I'm very worried about that. You know, I started tracking down what had happened to the bill, where it had gone. It went into the cabinet committees, dominated, dare I say, by black tie lawyers who are suspicious of this kind of thing. It got emasculated. It got sidetracked. It hasn't ever appeared before Parliament, and I don't see that it's going to end up in those cabinet committees or before Parliament this year. I'm really worried about that. Yet, so much of what it contains is starting to be used almost clandestinely, as Anne has suggested, because it's effective, because it works. But I really am very concerned about this bill ever seeing the light of day. And it is really our best hope for that combination of assisting youth, working with communities, and reducing crime.
Isn't one of the problems in the context, though, and people have raised this very much in the context of the debate that's arisen around the president, is that people out there are scared. And the natural reaction of a fearful populace is to say, lock people up where I can't see them and where they can't get at me.
Well, politicians do respond to that kind of thing. And, you know, the public is not always right.
That's true.
If you look at the whole debate around the capital punishment, you know, it's been proved over and over again that capital punishment does not bring down murder. Yet you, you know, if you had to take a poll in this country, probably the majority of people now who are scared by crime would say you've got to have capital punishment.
Yes.
It's the same with this kind of issue. People are scared. There's these young, tough youths walking around. What you want to do is get them out of your face.
Mm.
And the way to do that is to put them in jail. Unfortunately, it backfires so completely, as you said in the beginning. What happens is you're teaching youths to get in your face by putting them in prison, and they come out and they're even more in your face.
Let's hear from another caller. Irina Smith is with NICRO down in Cape Town. They work with rehabilitation of offenders and other programs. She's involved in the diversion of young people from the criminal justice system, a specialist on that. Ms. Smith, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Your thoughts?
Yes, just a statement to say that... it has been proven that other measurements do work. Diversion, for instance, NICRO has been putting like 20 to 25,000 young people through their diversion programs. And the communities and South Africa must realize these are kids and people coming from our homes. They're our mothers, our fathers, our uncles, our aunts, our children. And we can fight crime without necessarily having to lock people up. We must just really embrace the other measurements that is available and really go for it and not be scared of actually putting people through programs and say, but we can make a difference.
Give us an example of a program that you run. I mean, just so people can get a concrete sense of what the options are.
Well, we have a lot of different diversion programs, and one of the programs, for instance, is called The Journey, which is a program where we put children through outdoor adventure therapy together with their families. Then we've got a lot of other programs, for instance, like our life skills-based programs that focuses on specific issues that motivates the crime that children commit. One thing that we have to remember is we must not just address the symptom, which is the criminal behavior or the behavior that the child shows, but we must address the underlying issues, the real issues that are leading these children to exhibit difficult behavior.
Well, what do you say, Ms. Smith, and I'll put the same question to the guests in a moment, but that there's a certain sentimentality about these outdoor therapy programs, for example, that once everyone's gone away from them feeling much better about themselves, the lasting benefit is not substantial enough, that people go back to broken homes, they go back to difficult material circumstances, they go back to educational systems that are not meeting their needs. Fundamentally, nothing's changed.
I think, yes, what is very important is that we need to realize we're working with a problem that we have to address over the long term. We cannot just put a child through a three-week program and say everything's fixed, everything's fine. But the involvement and the support networks that we create afterwards, the aftercare, and we are busy at the moment doing a longitudinal study, which is a follow-up to a previous study, that shows that the internal changes and attitudinal changes and behavior changes that occurs within children when they go through these programs, all it means is that we need to give them a higher intensity of programs and do more work to involve families and to involve other support networks.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's great. Thank you very much. Irina Smith calling us from NICRO, sharing that organization's experience in dealing with young offenders. Shirley in PE. Morning, Shirley.
Good morning, John. I'd just like to say in the book Freakonomics, Stephen Levitt says that crime in the United States was reduced by changing the abortion laws.
Yes.
In other words,
fascinating book.
Children become criminals.
Mm.
So in this country, I think it's a bit silly that we pay people to have unwanted children with a child support grant. And of course, we do have other problems like poverty and no law and order. But perhaps we should also look at what he says in the book.
Yeah, it's a very interesting book, I must say. Shirley on the line from Port Elizabeth. And Skelton, I mean, apart from, we're focusing a little bit, and I'd like to continue doing so, on programs for diversion, but is there also stuff in the Child Justice Bill that would have just been made a contribution to streamlining the way in which young offenders are dealt with, that some of it is procedural and not necessarily a policy matter?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, for example, at the moment, we don't have a law dealing with young offenders below the age of 18. And so to try and understand how you're meant to take a young person through the criminal justice system,
yeah,
you've got to read four different acts.
Right.
And not surprisingly, people get very confused about the picture. So one of the motivating reasons why we needed a separate piece of legislation was so that the practitioners working in the field would all be reading from the same book and would know what they were supposed to do. And yes, indeed, speeding up trials, ensuring legal representation, raising the minimum age from 7 to 10. There are a range of issues. So diversion is just one component. I think I should also just stress, because I know that the public tend to, as you said, feel that these ideas of adventure therapy programs are sentimental or whatever. I think it's important to stress that the majority of young offenders do not commit serious violent crime.
Yes.
Only about 30% of young offenders are committing crimes in that category. And at the moment, I think the crimes that the public are the most concerned about would be murder, rape, and armed robbery. Now, it's extremely unusual, as you can imagine, for any of those offenses to ever be diverted. Although, still then, if it was possible, one would be trying to find alternatives to imprisonment at sentencing stage. So I just think it's important to stress that we're not talking about diversion for murder. We're talking about diversion for theft and assault. And these are the majority of things that kids do.
Yeah. So do you have a view, Don Pinnock, as to whether, even though the Child Justice Bill hasn't gone through yet, whether we're getting better at streaming out people who are perhaps involved in lesser offences and keeping them out of prison, and that long-awaiting trial period, which appears to be incredibly dangerous for young people?
I think Arena Smith would be, being in NECRA, much better able to answer that question. She should come back on the line.
Okay.
But I'm not too hopeful. I think that on the ground there are organisations that are getting better at it, but the pressure from the top is in the other direction. Slap them all in jail. And I'm not terribly hopeful about that, but on another matter, to add to Anne's point about these programs, are they sort of soft on kids? Now, I've been connected to a program called Useeker, which has been running now for about 5 years, taking kids on a 9-month leadership program, really, but they all are high risk kids, and we use wilderness camps and wilderness therapy as well, and 360 kids, not one that we have found has ever gone back to a gang, because what you're doing is you're strengthening their personal view. You're giving them back respect that they kind of lost for themselves. And when they go back into the community, and we work with the community as well, they have a different view. They're not terribly interested in gangs. They're interested in other things.
But is the society giving them any reward for their change of focus? I mean, I see a scenario, and this is based on no experience. It's just a stereotype, perhaps, that I'm putting forward, where a young man or a young woman decides, yes, I'm going to take a different direction, but they try to get bursaries and they can't get them. They look for work and there's none. Are the conditions... Is the universe opening up in any favorable ways for these young people, given the commitment they've made to try and do something different?
I think it's very hard for them. We are in a situation where you have very poor communities, you have very damaged family situations. So, the kids that come out of this are total heroes when they actually do pull themselves together. It is very difficult, and I can't say that all programs go, yep, they're all better and everything's fine.
Sure.
We are in a situation where we have problems with education, problems with poverty, problems with family structure. But it is surprising to me and heartening how many of these kids do survive, do get better, do actually find jobs. We have a kid who was given to us by the courts because he was going to go to jail. He'd stolen, he'd held somebody up with a knife. He's now in third year university at Stellenbosch University. And so, it is possible.
Fantastic stories. Perhaps we as the media need to be telling them a little bit more and trumpeting a little bit louder that kind of achievement. We're back in a moment. We've got a call from the Community Law Centre at the University of the Western Cape. Looking forward to getting that institution's views. And Colin is on the line from Cape Town. Anyone else? 021-461-3079. 021-461-3075. This is the After 8 debate.
7.5% interest on a new telco line is a big deal. So is 10,000 Rand cash back. What do we do? Give them the choice. Pick up a tough Tata telco line while stocks last and choose a low, low 7.5% interest rate, or take 10,000 Rand cash back. The choice is yours, but stocks are limited. Very, very limited. Get to a Tata dealer or call 0861 Tata 11. Conditions apply. Tata telco line, the tough one.
No matter what they tell. Now, Foster and Allen sing the number ones. Like a bridge. Some of the world's greatest number one hits as sung by Foster and Allen on Sing the Number Ones. I closed my eyes. Two CDs with 40 number one songs. If tomorrow never comes. Available now. Sing the Number Ones by Foster and Allen.
How much do you know about giants? Well, if you own or manage an office, you'll be delighted to hear that giants come in small, medium, and large. So whether you need a small, dedicated desktop color printer or high-volume, high-speed network printers, there's a Nashua giant that'll work for you. From as little as $2,999, including VAT, which is small potatoes to own the giant name in color printers. Nashua, saving you time, saving you money, putting you first.
AM Live on SAFM.
021-461-3079. Jackie Gallinetti is a senior researcher at the Community Law Centre at the University of the Western Cape, calling us from Cape Town. Morning to you, ma'am.
Good morning.
Your thoughts?
I have just one comment and then a question for the panel.
Mm-hmm.
My first comment is in relation to the question of programme delivery in South Africa, is that the Department of Social Development has commissioned a research study into the development of minimum standards for programs. These are both operational minimum standards and mm-hmm. program minimum standards. So we have that. The department, it's completed. It's there with the department, and it's already in waiting, obviously, for the Child Justice Bill to be enacted so that it can be put into place. And a number of those minimum standards and the research done in relation to them show that the programs that we are offering in South Africa are compliant with international research to show that they do work. So mm-hmm. that's the one comment that I have. And then the question that I have for the panel, if they are able to answer it, is given the fact that the Child Justice Bill complies with our international obligations, it complies with the obligations set out in our constitution, the departments have put plans into place, the bill's been costed twice, why do they think that the bill has now disappeared subsequent to it being introduced into Parliament? And do they think that it will ever emerge again?
Great, thanks. Thanks for the comment and the question. That minimum standards thing is of interest as well. Colin in Cape Town. Good morning, Colin.
Good morning. The comments by your panelists regarding the administration of justice by communities and the reaction of narrowly defined law against this kind of thing suggests to me the question, why do we consider that the state has any role whatsoever to do in the adjudication of crime? If you harm me or I harm you, what has that got to do with the state? In accordance with our current judicial system, if I murder someone, I have committed a crime against the state, and the state brings a charge against me and tries me and judges me and passes a sentence. But if we think laterally, why should that be? Why should the administration of justice not lie entirely in the hands of the victim and the perpetrator, which would allow then for communities, families, and others to participate in the process of adjudicating crime? I've read arguments which will show how powerful a force that this can be, in particular when you think of how disempowering it is to victims when the state appropriates their crime. You see this with a great deal of pathos in courts where victims are virtually irrelevant
yes.
to the process of adjudicating crime, and particularly and very often the family and the parents. They play no role in it. So my question is, why should the state be involved in the matter of crime at all?
Okay, Colin, very interesting question, taking us to another level, but certainly very telling, though, for me, the point at the end that the whole process can really be quite isolating and disempowering of the people who are the victims of the crime. That certainly rings a bell with me. Hassan Logat is Media and Campaigns Manager at Sangoka. Morning to you.
Hi, morning, John. John, I think the difficulty that we have is that, I mean, clearly the media and others have mobilized very strongly for action on crime, and there is a real issue there, because while it's seen in many ways as a middle-class issue, it has impact because ordinary people get handbags snatched and poor people also are victims. But by and large, I think the media and others made this a bigger issue than poverty and inequality. And I think that maybe what we should do is put more pressure on the police and the system, the criminal justice system, to deal with syndicates and those big ones which entrap young people to do their work. and then to talk about how, where is the connection around poverty and inequality issues, because childhood poverty, which Children's Institute and others have spoken about, is clearly high. But it seems that a lot of these programs, and I say this from a slight distance, seem to be changing the minds and attitudes of people, but not structurally. You know, and I'm wondering, post-war in the UK and others, where full employment and such goals were there as national objectives, and I'm saying, what are the big issues, big things that governments have to be doing? And I'm saying that maybe this failure to have an encompassing vision, which the 10-year review speaks about, is probably part of the problem, but also a strategy that is inclusive. I mean, we've put people out of jobs. You know, half the people are unemployed. I mean, I really think we have to do those big issues a lot more. It's easier for governments to do this kind of thing.
Hassan Logat, thank you. Calling from Sangoka. Two SMSs. Kathy, we must all worry a lot more about crime victims than convicted criminals. And Jean has this view. We will never find a solution for crime until people in high authority set a good example. Back with our guests in a moment. Right now, though, let's get the very latest news. It is 8:30 and it's time for us to clock in with Vibhakshini Chetty once again. Morning.
Good morning. Top stories. Some of South Africa's top financial institutions have been singled out for lack of transformation by the Public Investment Corporation, PIC. Speaking at a conference on executive pay in Johannesburg, the PIC's chief executive officer, Brian Molefe, singled out Standard Bank, First Rand and Old Mutual for their lack of black executives. The Reserve Bank's Monetary Policy Committee starts with its first meeting today. The key issue set to overshadow the two-day deliberations is South Africans' continued dependence on credit spending. Analysts say inflation is in control and that the debate within the MPC will rather go over measures on how to curb credit spending. President Thabo Mbeki said on Sunday that interest rates were not the only tool to impact on spending. Economists expect the MPC to keep interest rates on hold, but to depository requirements could be lifted to curb spending. The Consumer Profile Bureau has been swamped by calls from consumers who want their debt cancelled. The Bureau says consumers believe they were unfairly over-indebted and want their debt cancelled before the National Credit Act becomes law on June 1st. The Act introduces new rights for consumers as well as measures that allow them to make informed decisions before buying goods on credit. And the International Atomic Energy Agency will resume inspections in North Korea following Pyongyang's announcement that it will curb its nuclear activities. IAEA Chief Mohammed El-Baradei has described the North Korean move as a step in the right direction. Pyongyang agreed to shut down key nuclear facilities within 2 months in exchange for badly needed fuel. El-Baradei says the IAEA will ensure that all nuclear activities are for peaceful purposes. I'll be back with a full news update at 9.
SAFM, South Africa's news and information leader, with John Perlman.
Thanks for Bakshini. Let's get a traffic update now. Rob Byrne, good morning to you.
Thank you, John. Still busy on the N4 Witbank Highway going into Pretoria this morning. An earlier collision just prior to the N1 interchange is only just being cleared off to the side of the road. So backlog of traffic to clear through, and then onlookers passing the accident scene means it remains busy. Modderfontein Road at Van Riebeek Avenue in Edenvale, those traffic lights are down. There will be some delays on both of those routes for a bit longer. Jackknife truck on Deckers at Christian de Wet in Florida causing some problems. And cricket on today at the Wanderers. It's the final one-day international between South Africa and Pakistan. It's a day-nighter, so play starting at 2:30. There will be a build-up of traffic in the Melrose and Illovo area from probably about 1 o'clock, so early afternoon, and the usual local restrictions. Just factor in as well, the traffic lights on Corlett at Rudd are still down, so that's going to cause some extra problems, particularly for spectators going towards the cricket. Broken down truck in Pinetown on the M13 going up the hill towards Kloof and Hillcrest. It's in the left-hand lane halfway up the hill. Just stay in the right-hand lane to get around that easy. And then in Cape Town this morning, an earlier collision on the N1 involving a motorcyclist between Monte Vista and Vanguard Drive. Just means the approach to Cape Town from the Bellville side remains busy. And Beaufort West area, about 150 k's north of Beaufort West, so it's coming down through Hanover in towards Beaufort West on the N1 south. There is an overturned truck causing an obstruction. Just expect some delays approaching the scene of that. SAFM Traffic Watch, back to John.
Thanks, Rob. Well, between 9 and 12, morning talk, Xolani Gwala. Xolani joins us to spell out what he's going to be doing. Morning.
Hi there, John. Good morning to you. Well, coming up on Morning Talk today, the Human Rights Commission has said that xenophobia is on the rise in South Africa. saying foreigners are blamed for spiraling crime and growing unemployment. We'll check that with the United Nations High Commission for Refugees, and of course we'll take calls on that issue. A little later, John, curators of besieged asset manager Fidentia are said to be preparing to retrench up to a quarter of the company's 1,200 staff members. Now, Fidentia, of course, had taken nearly $2 billion from clients, but it was placed under curatorship 2 weeks ago for misappropriating client funds and issuing false documents to clients. Bruce Cameron, editor of Personal Finance with the Saturday Star, will join us on the line. And, of course, he will give us the breakdown on that story. We'll take calls on that as well. That coming up between 9 and 12 on Morning Talk. John?
Thanks, Golani. Good stuff coming up. Don't miss that. Ike, of course, 12 to 1, midday live, updating you on all the big breaking stories and bringing you some of the stuff that we're going to be covering at Parliament later this morning. So lots of good reasons to stay tuned to SAFM, and good reasons as well for you to give us a call on this number, 021 461 3079. 021-461-3075, two Cape Town lines for the After 8 debate for the duration of this week, 461-3079 and 461-3075. Let's reintroduce our guest. Dr. Anne Skelton joins us from the University of Pretoria. She coordinates the Child Litigation Project at the Centre for Child Law, and Dr. Don Pinnock, criminologist, journalist and author of a number of books about criminality, young gangs and young people books. Very interesting indeed. Now, let's just get back to Anne Skelton and Dr. Skelton, get your response perhaps to Jackie Gallinetti's question. Why is the bill being held up in your view?
I think that government's response to young offenders is schizophrenic. Mm-hmm. On the one hand, they do like the idea of diversion and trying to find alternatives. This is evident because space has been made for it within the system. On the other hand, we are still one of the very few countries in the world that retain life imprisonment for children. So at the other end of the scale, we're actually one of the worst world examples. Until recently, we had minimum sentences, including life imprisonment, for young people 16 and 17 years old, until that was struck down as because it was not consistent with the Constitution, mm-hmm. by our Supreme Court of Appeal. So, you know, I think government is confused about this, and this is perhaps why they are not acting on the bill, because they're ambivalent about it. Because the bill has an overall approach, and although I've stressed the fact that it is very balanced, at the same time, its departure point is a restorative justice departure point. And the caller, Colin, and I'm sure Don will want to talk more about that, many of those ideas that you can have direct meetings between victims and offenders and address crime that way are incorporated in the bill, and one would be able to do that at diversion and sentencing stage.
Don Pinnock, intriguing call from Colin. Your thoughts on it? Any clues and directions there that we could follow?
Well, I must say, before I even answer that, is that the quality of ideas and questions coming from the callers is very impressive. I hope more people are listening in government.
let me tell you, it is a real feature of this After 8 debate. There is fantastic depth of thinking and wrestling with ideas out in the SAFM audience, and I'm sure in the wider public, which is something that I really admire and enjoy. But do continue.
The Collins point is a good one. Why should government intervene in things that happen in a community and have impact on a community? I think, though, that it has to be a balance. The government is a legal person, in a sense, and
yes.
If you allow communities entirely to run their own justice, you can get kangaroo courts and excess. But what the Child Justice Bill does is neatly, very smartly balance that situation, where you have youth justice workers who are schooled and understand the larger legal situation, and you have family group conferences and victim involvement of people who are directly affected by the youth who has perpetrated some crime. So what is so smart about the Child Justice Bill is that it balances that, and,
yes.
and it allows both the state and the community to get involved, and only then really do you get a kind of redemption, because very often victims, as Anne said earlier, they're just sidelined, they're not part of the process, and so then healing and closure never happens for them. Whereas in this kind of restorative justice, the victim is very much there, and a young person has to look somebody in the eye, and and say sorry, I guess, or you know, the victim has to see who it was and what sort of person it was that offended them.
And hear what they have to say, unmediated by a court process, which is an interesting idea as well.
Absolutely.
Mary in Rustenburg. Good morning, Mary. Mary from Northwest. Hi.
Good morning. How are you?
Well, and yourself?
I'm very well. I would just like to let you know, I went through a diversion program with NICRA about 3 years ago. I'm 22 now.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, it helped me so much.
Yes.
I mean, I was in an assault problem thingy,
mm-hmm.
and I did the whole drug thing, and I got a hold of NICRA, and I must say that really changed my life. I would have been in prison if it wasn't for them. It was an ongoing thing. They really helped me to understand who I am, where mm-hmm. I come from. They worked with my family. I could work with my family, and I understood where problems come from and how I can deal with them in the future.
Mary, when you say you were involved in an assault thing, were you charged with assaulting somebody else?
Yes, I was.
And how did the other person, because one of the things we've been exploring is how people who are victims of crime can engage in the process. Was there anything in particular that involved you in talking or dealing with the person?
Yes, certainly.
Tell us about that.
We had a conference where mm-hmm. I met my victim,
mm-hmm.
and that was, well, at first it was really scary, but it was life-changing to see as well what I do can affect other people, and to actually talk in person with this person was life.
Mary, thank you. Fascinating call from Rustenburg, someone actually involved in one of these programs and talking about it. George in Cape Town. Hi, George.
Morning, John, and to your panel. I agree very much with this restorative justice approach to things. But I've got another angle to this, and that is, you know, what is very important is that we don't make prisons our safety net for people who are falling through the cracks in the system.
Mm.
We need to really address the issue of a basic income grant and creating a safety net outside of prisons. Because at the moment, people find, you hear very often that people find themselves better off in prisons where they get three meals a day, etc.
Mm.
Now, this is a terrible indictment on our society.
Do you think it's true, George?
We need to reward honest work. I mean, people in this country are paid very low wages.
Mm.
I've worked abroad, and the minimum wage in many countries is the equivalent of 50 rand an hour. And we got to make sure that, you know, that honest work is remunerated and rewarded, and so, you know, we create the right kind of role models. And the other aspect of it is that if we look at the values in our society of conspicuous consumption and all the materialistic values, you know, it's a societal, society has to really look, you know, deeply at our own, values and how we, you know, display our wealth and, you know, all that.
George, thank you. From Cape Town, Rachel in Pretoria. Hi, Rachel.
Hello. Thank you very much for a very interesting program.
Mm-hmm.
I also was phoning in to share the fact that I've been working with young men in rural villages in the Eastern Cape
mm-hmm.
and putting them through a life skills program that aims primarily to prevent HIV, but has also got people to look at their actions and the implication of their actions on others.
Yes.
And we've had very interesting experiences, young men talking about being made to realize that doing things like going out and stealing pigs are wrong. And we've evaluated our program and shown that young men can also become less violent having gone through it. And so I think that these sorts of programs are really important and should be supported as part of the government impacts on trying to reduce crime. I also have a question for your panel, though, because they said that the new bill was not going to cover serious offences. And I want to particularly point them in the direction of rape and say, is this right? Because we know that men who rape often do it more than once, and the majority of men who rape do so for the first time when they're actually technically children.
Mm.
And in other countries, people have tried to put people who get involved in rape, particularly where it's not aggravated rape, through restorative justice programs as a way of trying to prevent them reoffending and try and also increase the proportion of people who are made to take responsibility for their crime, because so few people who rape are ever convicted, and that means the others always get off scot-free.
Okay.
And so I want to ask your panel, should we be excluding all violent offences, and should there be some serious offences, particularly rape, that actually should be included within the restorative justice framework?
Rachel, thank you, and thanks for the sharing the experience. Is interesting. I mean, Rachel talking about working primarily in the area of HIV/AIDS, but some similar themes perhaps, life skills, personal responsibility, considering the consequences of your own actions. Never really thought before of an overlap between that area of social work and the kind of stuff we set out on. So good stuff coming. Keep it coming, please, on 021 461 3079. 021 461 3075. We'll get a response to Rachel's question in just a moment.
On the day I was born, my people celebrated by having their first truly free election. A year later, we won the Rugby World Cup, and the following year, the African Cup of Nations. That year, my son Josiah won an Olympic gold. 3 years later, one of my sons became the first African in space. When I was only 10, my daughter won a Best Actress Oscar.
For a young democracy, we've got a lot to be proud of. Be proud. Buy proud. Proud, the magazine that celebrates South Africa. On sale now.
Hey, ball, over here.
Stevie, I'm open.
I'm open, pass the ball over here. Pass the ball, dude.
I got the shot. Come on, man. Had the shot.
Play in the league where you belong by trading CFDs online with NedBank Capital. Start trading now at www.nedbankcfd.co.za. Make things happen. NedBank, an authorized financial services provider.
Didn't think you'd make it for our golf day, Tim, not after the theft at your warehouse.
That was no handicap for me, John. Everything's been sorted out.
What?
Yes. Business Outsurance took care of everything, chop chop.
At Business Outsurance, it's our business to take care of your business. We offer you comprehensive cover and great service. And because there's no middleman, you save money on your premiums. Whether you need to cover commercial vehicles or your office contents, Business Outsurance is the answer. Find out why we're the fastest growing commercial insurer in the country. Call Business Outsurance now on 08600 60000. Outsurance is an authorized financial services provider.
In a world where less is more, we say more is more. From only 132,500, the Nissan Titan, available in hatch and sedan, really does offer you more. More space, more luxury, and more comfort. So test drive a Nissan Titan before the end of April and see for yourself that more really is more. And you could win a holiday of your choice to the value of 50,000 Rand. For more details, call 0800 Nissan or visit nissan.co.za. Nissan Titan. Shift mindset.
AM Live on SAFM.
The After 8 debate. Bay is calling from Margate down in KwaZulu-Natal. Morning to you.
Morning, John, and your panel. I've been involved with Boys Town to a large extent, and I'm wondering whether the government could not fund more Boys Town organizations. They have wonderful success in bringing errant boys to mend their ways. They have had wonderful success turning out some of the top people in our country today.
People who don't know about Boys Town, just a brief description.
The social services, I think, bring them to the notice of Boys Town if boys have been errant in their ways. It's usually petty crime.
Okay.
And they've, through force of circumstances, they have committed some crime.
Okay, and they live in residence at the school.
They go to school at Boys Town, they go right through to matric. They have a peer system where the boys sort of govern themselves and they learn to be leaders.
Okay, interesting. Bay, thanks. Thanks, Bay. I had some experience with Boys Town in my own school, sports events involving them and so on. Rachel's question, Anne Skelton, the new bill not covering serious crimes, is that accurate?
No, I think I maybe just didn't express myself all that clearly. The bill is entirely restorative justice in its orientation.
Mm-hmm.
Diversion, the way it's referred to in the bill, means at a pre-trial stage, the case is diverted away from the criminal justice system. So you never go through the courts, through the trial, and you don't get a criminal record. And what I said was that it was unlikely that cases like murder and armed robbery would be dealt with in that way. However, at the sentencing stage, there is a wide range of restorative justice options. And so it would still be possible to have a victim-offender mediation or a family group conference, perhaps linked to a wholly suspended sentence or something like that, even in what are perceived as quite serious crimes. So, and in fact, victims, we must remember that restorative justice is actually primarily built around victims, and victims have more needs in serious crimes, not less.
Yes.
So I think for them it's very important that restorative justice is there as a feature throughout the system, whether it's attached to a diversion or whether it's attached to an alternative sentencing program.
Don Pinnock, I mean, in a lot of your arguments, the word community keeps coming up, and you obviously see this potentially as a bedrock for some kind of solution when young offenders are involved. Does that, though, not perhaps understate the extent to which communities are, have been, and perhaps will become more so fragmented over time?
Communities get fragmented and are fragmented, pardon me, but what programs do, something like USICO, will be to get mentors and train those mentors from the community, get the community around the young people, the young offenders, and work with parents and the broader community and, of course, the victim. So, in a way, these programs don't only simply rely on community, but they build community. They build community back. They stick it back together around the problem. So, community can be romanticized as being this wonderful thing that you know everybody holds together. Very often, it isn't. People in cities often, squatter camps, for instance, have very damaged fabric in which they're living. But the need for and the sense of and the ability to build community remains with people, and it can, when fostered, be put back together. And it is a very powerful force in the transformation of young people who've offended.
Let's hear from Thoreya Solomon. She's Executive Director of NICRO on the line to us from Cape Town. Morning to you, Ms. Solomon.
Hi, John. I just want to make a quick comment. I want to agree with Don. It's very true that we can mobilize communities. Communities are not as fragmented as people think they are. There is strength in them, and we've got to work with them. Another very important point, NICRO's been running diversion for 14 years now, and we've proven that it works. So society needs to know that this is not a new option. It's not something new that's coming to South Africa.
Can I ask you, do you have a view on why the Child Justice Bill might have been held up? Because clearly you would have been consulted in its framing. Have you kept track with as to why it's...
Yeah, we've been keeping track. We're part of the Child Justice Forum with Justice. And I think what's holding the bill up, this is my view when I analyze the situation, is that government will have to make resources available to implement the bill. They'll be obligated to do so. And I think that there's obviously some fear on government side that if the resources are not made available, they can be then legally held accountable. So I think there's that hold up that government is not coming forward and saying, let's push the bill.
Okay, so a fear that if they do it but don't do it properly, there could be repercussions.
Absolutely.
Yeah, interesting take. Simon in Cape Town. Morning, Simon.
Good morning, John, and good morning to your panel. I wanted to sort of take a slightly different
Okay, Simon, I think we've lost him because that line wasn't the best. So, Simon, if you can call back, 021-461-3079, 021-461-3075, if you'd like to join in the After 8 debate. Anne Skelton, do you have a view on what Thoreya Solomon was saying, that one of the concerns about not putting the bill forward, if they don't have the resources to make it work, that could be a reason for its delay?
Yes, I think that's probably very accurate. But I would like to also point out that this bill was costed and the Treasury has actually allocated funds for the Child Justice Bill. So it must be the first bill in history of this country to have money allocated to it, and it hasn't been passed yet.
Okay, so there is money available. Now, we heard about Boys Town. That was a call from Bay down in KwaZulu-Natal. And this SMS, perhaps something similar, I suggested years ago that the government start kibbutzim, where offenders serve their time on release. They could share in profits. Don Pinnock, is there a view that creating institutions like Boys Town is a good thing, or do you think that these things should have a looser, perhaps physical arrangement, allowing them to be more part of a community? Is there one size that fits all?
I don't think there is. I think it's very. You have to be sensitive to the community. Those kind of needs is an absolute place for places like Boys Town. And there's an absolute place for family group conferences and consultation. I think we need a whole range of responses, but I think we need also to be able to assess the situation and say this foot does not fit into this shoe and we need a different thing. We need to be flexible in how we approach this. And the problem is that very often government institutions don't understand how to be flexible. And people who make laws want to make laws that fit everything. And that's why it's often so difficult. And it goes into that question of why the bill hasn't been passed. It would be costs. But it's also that legislators like clean, neat lines to be drawn. And community justice and restorative justice isn't. It doesn't create those clean lines. And the other thing is, and it's a bit of a controversial point, I think many of the people who are making the decisions about something like the Child Justice Bill are people who have no sense and have not been part politically of communities. A lot of them have been in exile. And they don't have that sort of UDF understanding that communities are solid, are able to work, do work, and you can work with them. And I think at least that's a part of the problem also about the bill not being passed.
Denny on the line from Joburg. Good morning, Denny.
Good morning. Good morning to you and to the panel. My contribution isn't a practical one and it's only dealing to try and deal with root causes. So I hope you bear with me if I quickly give you my contribution. I'm a conservative Christian and I believe that, you know, I feel concerned that we're talking about this matter of crime without reference to what God has done, because God has made a provision for the heart of man to be changed, which is the mainspring or the motivation of all our behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a verse in the New Testament, because I'm Christian, I quote this, that if any man is in Christ Jesus, he is a new creation. Old things have passed away. Behold, all things have become new. And God went to great lengths to make this possible by going to the cross and suffering for our sins, so that we can be, so that we can become morally upright. That's my contribution, and thanks for your patience.
Denny, thanks. Calling from Joburg, Jan du Plessis, a magistrate in Limpopo Province, joining us on the After Eight Debate. Morning to Mr. du Plessis.
Good morning.
Your thoughts?
Yeah, good morning to all. My little contribution is the following. I'm a very good strong advocate for the restorative justice system. Diversion, and when you get to sentencing in certain stages with certain crimes, that you divert them away from prison. But my concern is the following, and I know I've attended some courses on the Child Justice Bill and costing has been done, but still in the old system, if I can call it the old system, or the current system that we are in, the guys don't join the party. With that I mean social workers, the police, and the society. I sometimes find that I sentence a guy or divert him right from the beginning and just to end up being the only person to support this whole system.
Yes.
I certainly think, and I don't know how they're going to do it, but they need to sensitize, first of all, the social workers that they actually must do it. It's not a choice that they want to do it. They must do it. And secondly, if I release this youngster into the society again, the society must also be sensitized that this is actually for the benefit of the society.
Yeah.
And if someone out there listening can actually roadshow this to introduce the system to the community, because they have this fabulous act and a fabulous system, and only 5% of the country knows that it's actually working,
right.
The rest of the community doesn't think that it's working, then it's not working.
Mr. du Plessis, when you say the social workers...
This guy, and you've touched on this previously, that this guy is released and the system is not working, and it's a whole spiral effect. If they start losing faith in the justice system, then we can have all the best acts in the world. If the Joe guy on the ground does not believe in the system, which can actually work, then it will not work.
Thank you very much. Jan du Plessis, magistrate in Limpopo, sharing some of his experience. Anne Skelton, it does raise big questions, doesn't it, that we need different departments all working together. Do we have that?
Well, it's definitely improved, and the Child Justice Bill talks about the need for intersectoral cooperation, and there is now in every province an intersectoral committee on child justice. But, of course, it can always be improved. I think the advantage of a new law is that you do have a rollout of training, you have a kind of level of new enthusiasm, and all your probation officers and police and so on will all have been trained on the same instrument. And I think this is what we're lacking. We started that process of training, as the magistrate said, he's attended some of those courses. But of course, now that the bill is on the back burner, and the worst thing is that we really don't know what's going to happen. You know, government is not saying whether they're going to pass this bill or not. So really, nobody knows where to take this now. And I think that has led to a kind of falling off of enthusiasm amongst some role players, although it's very encouraging to hear the magistrate saying what he says.
Thank you very much to Dr. Anne Skelton from the University of Pretoria. Thanks as well to criminologist Dr. Don Pinnock. It was his piece in the Sunday Independent that really got us talking on this topic and engaging with some fascinating calls. And thank you all for some terrific contributions. People out there really thinking about these issues and coming up with their own ideas. And hopefully we can take this further forward at a later stage. That's it for AM Live, the show produced by Cara Skickney, Rajan Clausen, Lebo Monomaholo and Marumo Kekana. Our debate producer is Jake McCormick. Our technical producer, the ever-present Mark Prella. Our senior producers, Zane Samar and Manledi Matabohe. Our executive producer, Stephen Lang and Tandanani Dlamini. I'm John Perlman.